Hello, everybody. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for that introduction. I am grateful to be here. I've been an electrical engineer for quite some time. I have a bachelor's and master's in electrical engineering. And about 5 years ago, I started to get a really intense desire and also the opportunity to explore science and faith in my...
Can you move your mic up higher?
Sure. I got two mics, so I don't know which one to move, but... Can you hear me now? Is that better? Okay. I'll try and speak a little bit louder as well. And so starting to integrate my faith with my technical background was really enjoyable. So I got a master's in science and religion. Liked it so much that I kept going. And so now I'm finishing another master's in Christian apologetics. And my advisor has a lot of background in philosophy, and so we kind of work together on this topic. And so what I'd like to do is present some of my initial findings. I'd like to get some feedback on this. And also, as I'm working through my thesis, if you guys would like to track that, I would be glad to share more information about that. But the next couple of charts will also give you a little bit of an introduction of why I'm looking at these topics. Here's a brief outline. I wanted to give a little bit of an overview, a motivation for the topic, and then I wanted to talk a little bit about the nature of information, and there were some excellent talks yesterday that addressed that subject, so I'm going to kind of lean on that a little bit, but give you a little bit of a review. And what I'm doing in my thesis is actually an analysis of alternatives, of looking at different integration options of putting together science, theology, and ontology, and so I just want to present a little bit of a perspective on that. And then I want to talk the bulk of the time on looking at genomic information from these three different areas. And I use the analogy of kind of like a triathlon, that I have to be an expert in three different, very distinct areas. And if you do that, I'm arguing that perhaps you can actually get a better sense of the overall content of what's in the genome, and then have a little bit of a summary and discuss some next steps. So first of all, genomic research has just produced a tremendous amount of data. And as I'm getting a chance to look at that, I don't have a biology background, so it's been very interesting just to have my technical background and look at that. And so what is the understanding, as we're trying to understand its meaning, where are we at and where could we potentially go from there? You're going to see in my brief, I have a lot of questions. I have more questions than answers, and this is sort of where I'm at in my development in thinking through this, but also welcome other people's thoughts about that. Did God organize this to be discoverable? Now that we can actually look at whole genomes and see these tremendous aggregations of information sources, like the human genome being 3 billion bit pairs, and that's just a lot of information. It's a lot of data. And so does it represent divine code? I know that's not everybody agrees with that, but it's a question to at least ask. And what is required to understand the genomic information? Can we effectively understand that with just in the realm of naturalism, or is there some aspects where we have to bring in the supernatural? So I'm going to explore in this brief is how science, theology, and ontology could potentially work together and apply that towards DNA. And as I'm doing it, I'm going to walk through what I'm doing in an analysis of alternatives and show you the range that I have and a little bit of how I'm looking at trying to give an assessment between these various options. So what is the motivation for this topic? You know, I am just very profound just as a believer, and this is a neat conference where I can actually express that. To bring my faith and just to be in awe of God's creation. And there's so many different domains where you could actually reach in and touch that. The thing that I really like about the genome is that you could hold it in your hand. It's this concentrated, the whole story, if you will, is right there. And so if I'm looking at these three different dimensions, I wanted to have a few specific things that I was observing and some questions about each. As first of all, from a scientific point of view, does DNA... research show complexity and high-level function. So what is it that we're actually seeing as we're looking at it in a deeper way? Does naturalistic explanation adequately explain what occurs there or not? And some observations that I have is I see examples of advanced manufacturing techniques, system complexity, or organization. And working with a colleague of mine, that he was mentioning that the fact that there's quick protein folding, that some of the modeling that has been done, that how can it fold that quickly? It seems like an interesting factor to consider. From a theological perspective, do some of the epigenetic modifications in DNA degradation show the impacts of the fall or sin in our world? And what I mean by that is it's like an analogy of, like, say where there was something in a person's life that caused a certain thing for them to change. They lived through a time where there wasn't much food, or they went through some depressed situations, or say there was some alcoholic in their background. There are other factors with some of those things that are in the genes, but there's also some overlays that I could argue that indicate epigenetic effects that maybe you're familiar with, verses where it talks about the sins of the father being going down to the third and fourth generation. Perhaps there's a correlation to think about. But as a minimum, just being informed about our faith as we look into the nature of what we're looking at, that may be another dimension to consider. And finally, an ontological perspective is the nature of reality explainable by methodological naturalism, or everything is physical. Is that a way to have a complete understanding of what we're seeing or not? And perhaps that would have some impacts on how we formulate and explain research if we're denying anything outside the physical world. So that's a possible thing that I also want to consider. On the right is a visualization of the human chromosome Y, and I definitely want to give credit to Josiah Siemens, who is a person I've been able to connect with, and this is a visualization tool that he did in part of his PhD program in bioinformatics. And so there's a little section that I'll come back to in the middle that you see some bars that is an example of something called a tandem repeat. So what is the nature of information? In genomic information, as a minimum, it contains building instructions for an organism. It may not be all that is required, but at least there definitely is been mapping of proteins, of DNA sequences to proteins. Where did it come from? Is it random data? Does it contain different types of information? That's more of a thing that I find that's interesting in what I'm trying to do with my thesis. So information, basically, you're trying to communicate something from one person, from one entity to another, having a mechanism that there's an occurrence of specific sequences or symbols or impulses that you're seeing. It's that versus something else. And the nature of information received depends on what the recipient already knows. There has to be a common code, a common language, so that the sender can understand, knows what the receiver will be understandable. And so we're basically have this large sequence of information, and we really don't know exactly what the code is. What I mean by that is, like, if you were to assume that this was divine programming, just to use that as an analogy, if depending, some people may or may not see that would be the way it is, but assume that, say it was written in Java or C or C++. I have a little bit of a computer science background. We don't even have that. We don't know what compiler they used. There's a lot of variables that make it difficult to maybe assess what exactly is going on. So what I wanted to explore is, from a cross-disciplinary approach, is consider how would it affect if I was trying to be theologically informed in my exploration of the genome, how would that affect? From an ontological point of view, how is that going to impact the way I frame the problem? And how much of a sensitivity would there be across various types of positions? And on this chart, I'm trying to show the trait space that I currently have in my analysis of alternatives. And I'm trying to look at the integration that occurs between them, and I'm not trying to focus on origins by listing these list of distinctions, but in the next chart I'll go into a little bit in more detail. But I was trying to give exemplars of things of how science and faith are held differently by different groups. And perhaps that's a way that I could start to in an unbiased sense, do an assessment. A sensitivity analysis is something I do at work all the time using this type of analysis of alternative approach. And so the three basic parameters that I'm looking at, or I came up with some characteristics for science, theology, and ontology. So what is here is I'm just trying to characterize in a rough sense what might be some distinctions between these different categories. So anything from going from methodological naturalism to various ways where the influence of theology becomes more and more of an important issue. And I'm trying to really not polarize of get into, you know, different camps, if you will, but just trying to expose categorically of what would be sort of a difference between different ways of assessing this. And perhaps there is much of a distinction as you vary, perhaps there is not. And that's what I'm trying to explore. So hopefully if I didn't step into any landmines by going through that, now I want to go through sort of, if I was to walk through that as a premise, what would it start to look like for each one of these perspectives? So first of all, the scientific perspective, as I said before, genomic research has, I would argue, has shown evidence of system function with complex operation, that coding and non-coding sections are cataloged. That's fairly well understood, but as some of the talks before mine started to point out, that it's not clear that just because you can map that this correlates to a certain protein, there's relationships between different parts of different chromosomes that come in to that. And once again, I'm not a biologist, but as I look at some of the gene expression and the complexity that goes way beyond Mendel's laws of looking at very fundamental organisms or plants, that all these things have to come together. And I also read a little bit about that, even it's not always just associated with one chromosome in one area, that there can be, when it's unfolding and there's different interactions of getting that information to have it then processed, that it's a multi-dimensional. It's like when I think of computing, I think of it's a one-dimensional processing. One of the things I did in my master's in electrical engineering was looking at two-dimensional processing for creating a computer that was two-dimensional. And so it's a three-dimensional computing problem and manufacturing operation that's going on. Most funded research is focused on the portions of the genome associated with protein coding. But there's still a lot more there that is not being considered in the research, at least that I'm available with my initial look. So how do we effectively analyze and understand the over 3 billion base pairs in the human genome? With my engineering background, I like to do modeling, but there may actually be a real merit to this, is various types of genome modeling may help quantify functionality, and also perhaps looking at maybe there's other orthogonal ways of looking at this that may give us some better insight. And then just finishing up with the human genome is fairly complicated. One thing that I found, at least from the information I got off the NIH website, is on the order of about 3 billion base pairs is what defines our individuality from one person to another. So 99.9% of the genome is the same from person to person. And yet there's a lot of diversity in a lot of different levels that we experience as people. So from a scientific level, I started to look at two types of models, and this is the first and the major one that I wanted to address, is trying to group thematically into some major areas of what goes on in cellular functions. And so I looked at reproduction, manufacturing, and modification. And so this next chart was an attempt to just show some of those basic premises that go on, some of those basic functions. And this could be a template where I could then look at how these different alternatives would then lay out some things related to each one of these basic categories. And there's some interesting things that come out that I think are just phenomenal. It's like, as far as I understand, the only time that the chromosomes become visible is during cell division. And so, wow, why does that happen? I'm always kind of just in awe as I look at some of these processes that go on. In terms of manufacturing, as I did some reading about this, early computing actually started to look a little bit like this type of a manufacturing operation that you would have a paper tape, and there would be some. It would be actually more of a physical computer rather than chips that we're used to in our computers now. And it would start to have actually look a little bit more like what you would see in a cellular operation. And another area that I thought was really interesting was what goes on in terms of modifications. There's mutations, that there could be a section of DNA that is put in there mistakenly. There's also a lot of error correction that goes on. With my engineering background, that is something that I find really curious, is that how much errors can actually be tolerated and it still can have the basic function. I also mentioned about epigenetic modifications, and so an interesting thing that maybe go a little bit beyond just sort of a linear assessment of the data from a classical scientific point of view. And then DNA degradation, is that something that we see as a result of the fall, that when does death occur, that when there's not enough viable DNA to maintain the functionality of an organism? So I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I just want to give you an example of what I've been starting to think about. How would you thematically put something from each one of these major perspectives? And it's really easy to sort of fill in the scientific area, but how would you then start to think in terms of the theological or the ontological element that would fold into there? And like an infinite designer programs a genome, how would you start to think about in terms of reproduction, where would you start to involve these things that may typically from a first blush not have a lot of correlation and sensitivity of showing the range of having various levels of integration of those two. So like I said, well, I'm still starting to do this, and I would appreciate people's comments, but I'll just move on and then talk about a few other things. This is a blow up of the figure that I had before in the middle that you see these bars in the middle. And there is a fair number of tandem repeats that are found in the human genome. Working with Josiah Siemens, one of the factoids he gave me, that's roughly about 7%. And what is the nature and function of these tandem repeats? There's a couple possibilities that I know of. It's just maybe this is just from an evolutionary path, that this is just leftover repeats that may not have much in the way of information. Perhaps it's mutations that you see multiple copies that are occurring, but perhaps it's not that. Perhaps it's more in terms of a data block. If you think in terms of analogy of a computer, and my next chart will walk you through that a little bit, perhaps it actually does have meaning. Maybe we don't even understand the basic building blocks of understanding what that might point out. One of the things that I've heard in terms of possible ways that could be going on is in programming, they have something called design patterns. And so are we seeing some examples of design patterns that this may be something in like a polymorphic type of thing where depending on what types of inputs come in, it knows what it needs to read and what it needs to send out. And so it could be more complicated, or it could just be something that's just, you know, evolutionary hangover of something or other. But to start to think about what that might mean and how these different faith positions might address that might be interesting to see what type of sensitivity exists, and perhaps that might add to the body of knowledge of how much we should include our faith in scientific research and in what way. Coming back once again to Josiah Siemens, he recently published a paper, and one of the things he was proposing was some parallels between computers and biological systems. And it's definitely not a one-to-one comparison, but there were some things that you could, in a basic sense, say that there is some similarities here that may be worth analyzing. And this might be an example of a way of doing some type of modeling of genomic processes that might start to be useful of looking at things from a different point of view other than just mapping of different base pairs to proteins or what have you. So I grouped it thematically into three areas. There's memory, if you will, that DNA, you may give an analogy, it's like a hard drive, that's the master in building instructions for an organization. RNA, it actually reads from that hard drive. and then processes that and actually goes to an assembly area and produces what is stored in that random access memory, if you will. And a second grouping would be in terms of a processor, that there's dedicated processors, if you will, in the whole manufacturing process. And so that might be something similar to what you see for a graphic processor in a computer that's focused on producing an image for a user of that computer. The nucleus might have an analogy of a CPU. And then a third category would be in terms of data. And one of the things that I include here is tandem repeats might be something that's used often in computing as data blocks. That it could be a source of data that characterizes a certain thing that you then read from that data block, maybe even a certain location within that data block, depending on what you're trying to do. So anyway, that's just an example of analogy. Now I'm switching to a whole different, it's almost like oil and vinegar going into a different domain. And so I almost have to pause for a second and have you guys think from a different point of view. So maybe just pretend like we're back this morning at the worship service and thinking about what it means to be spiritually centered. And then how would we then start to be thinking in terms of something like genomic information? What does the Bible say about genomes? It really doesn't say anything about genomes. But what does it say? What does it say about information? Once again, not very much. But there's verses like Proverbs 1:7 where it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." Or in Psalm 111:10, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So how do we start to bring an informed faith into things like this? We can have knowledge. We can have understanding. Another verse that I like is Jeremiah 33:3. "Call upon me and I'll tell you great and mighty things you do not know." We serve a great and mighty God, and he has made this world that we can discover things, and we can learn all these amazing things. And I could argue that in heaven, for this room, they would get excited about this. Other rooms, they might. But to continue to discover more things that God has created, I think that would be fascinating. And then another thing in terms of theology that we can to lean from is, what is systematic theology? It's like a structured way of taking all these different genres of things that are in the Bible and put it in a way that you could access and sort of have a clear, quote, instruction manual to think biblically. Well, maybe that's a way where you can start to bridge this gap and perhaps use this in the scientific realm. And so this graphic that I have in this slide is trying to show a possible construct of the layers of knowledge. And you think in terms of a layer of an onion. So the outer layers are the clear things that we can see with our senses. That is, I see this table, I see you, I'm in a room. And that's very clear. But then we can start to make some inferences of what's known in the physical world. We can have sensors that can then see what we can't see with our senses, and we can go a little bit deeper. And then we create theories and understandings of how that might work. And what I'm arguing is a possibility, maybe we're slowly transitioning from how man sees things to how God sees things. And the verse that I would give that would be talking about this is Deuteronomy 29:29, that the secret things belong to the Lord, but the things revealed belongs to us. And so perhaps what he's trying to say, there are things for you to know, but there's things you can't understand. How does an infinite God relate to a finite world? And so how do we start to see those intersections? Where do they start to come up? So in this next chart, I start to talk about that a little bit further. Is I would argue that God is open to man seeking to understand his creation. And there's examples where that comes out a little bit, and he provides a little bit of an explanation. He's not giving a manual of how it works, but just saying, you can see this, and let me tell you a little bit about that. Another part I think that is useful is just thinking in terms of a theologically, a spiritually based center, is that we live in a fallen world, and there's sin in the world. And so it affects our abilities, and I would argue it even affects our DNA. And so maybe as we get a better understanding, that might give another perspective of how we should go informed into scientific assessments. And then there's certain specific, unique characteristics of various organisms that are talked about, and I just picked out, of course, we're familiar with man, kind of self-reflecting on ourselves, but there was also other examples, and I just picked horse as an example, that were some unique, distinctive characteristics of that creation as an example of something that God pointed out. And so finally, you know, just finishing up with the theological perspective, is there an actual signature that's detectable and measurable and quantifiable? Perhaps with a genome, it might be something that you could actually get some insight from that with forensic analysis. That's just a speculation on my part. I don't know if it's true or not, but I still think it's an intriguing thing to consider. Now, once again, I'm doing another fundamental shift, and I'm going to a different domain in terms of the ontological perspective. My thesis advisor is a philosopher. I would never make a very good philosopher, so I just have to say that up front. But I'm also very amazed as I look at some of what I've been reading and getting some perspectives about this. And so methodological naturalism, as I understand it, an ontology that they would be looking at is just thinking that everything is physical and denying that there's anything spiritual, anything that goes beyond what would be in the physical domain. Well, I would argue, what about something like substance dualisms with mental states and intrinsic intentionality, which basically means there's stuff that goes beyond the physical. And one of the things that I wanted to explore with this line of thought is, how do we know what's real and what's not real? And how can we distinguish that? And does our ontology that we might use, our philosophical basis, does that impact? And are we blinded, if we put on a pair of spectacles and not be aware of what those spectacles might limit or enhance in what we're thinking? And so that's one of the things I wanted to explore with this realm. And so I'm just going to go quickly through this chart, but the argument that I want to say is that, how do you know that something's real? In philosophy, they have something called justified true belief. It's one of the ways that it is reasonable to argue that you know that something is actually real. How do you know what's not real? Is this just a fabrication of my mind? How can I assess when I'm making a theory and start to build upon that theory? Is that true to reality or is it not? And I'm going to use this next slide as a graphic to sort of talk about this. And potentially, this is something we may want to be aware of, both as we're thinking about our own position and also looking at other people's positions. And so over history, the straight line, I would argue, is reality. And there's been various things as we have been, there's been revelation that's been given to us. There's things about the natural world that we've become aware of. But as we start to go forward and we think of these different esoteric theories that maybe are getting closer to how things God would see them versus how we would see them, are we starting to either find the true reality or are we wandering off and that's not a true reality but it's something that is, it sounds feasible, but how do we know the difference? And so that's when it starts to come back to this ontology argument that I was mentioning. It's how can we distinguish between truth and non-truth? And so finishing up, I think that genomes are a rich data set to gain further scientific understanding. I would argue that if we bring in theological and ontological truths, it could save us time by having some better places where we start in that investigation. And I think I'm running out of time, so just finishing up. I'm also doing my AOA, my analysis of alternatives on this. And I would be glad to keep you guys in the loop. And I'm just going to finish up with one other thing that I'm going to mention is where do I go from here? I've had this journey for 5 years. I've really enjoyed it. And I'm looking for potentially a sea change in what I'm thinking about doing in my career and doing research and teaching and kind of being around people like you where I'm in more of a giving back mode is something I would be very interested in doing. And so maybe that might be going from here for further education, research, or other endeavors. I think like this tandem repeat that I mentioned might be an interesting area to explore. What about some of these basic looking at the genome differently? I'm an electrical engineer, and there's at least one person in this room I think could relate when I say this, but through signal processing, we're looking at this linear relationship between this base pairs relate to that protein. Well, what if there's different ways of looking at that, that say if you think in terms of something, there's something called spread spectrum or code division multiple access, how do you know that just that is the only thing that specifies that protein? And perhaps there may be some other things from other fields that could help to give insight. And also, looking at a theological route, is how would we start to model that intersection between God and how that signature might be apparent in something like genome? So thank you very much.
I'm afraid I must disagree with you. I think you'll be a great philosopher.
Oh, well, thank you. Okay. Well, thank you. I need all the encouragement I can get in the philosophy side, so. Yeah.
I second the statement. First of all, and I would like to add that I found this presentation, I really appreciate your presentation because I'm actually going to start working with Matthew this fall for a master's, and I've been working with what's called metagenomics, where I actually take whole genomes from water samples and water supply to look for signature sequences for bacteria that we found in the water intestines, just to check for deep contamination.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Any other?
Since you wanted research, I have a question for you. Maybe it's a crazy idea. So we have this 3 billion base pair sequence, which presumably could be simulated on a computer.
Yes.
So suppose we took the ovary from a woman and took the genetic sequence from that, put it on a computer. Suppose we took sperm from a man, genetic sequence from that, put it on a computer, and combined them. On the computer, would that count as creation of human life? If so, why? If not, why not?
Well, I would
break. I'm not expecting you to answer this.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you some thoughts about it if you want.
That one egg and one sperm.
Simulated on a machine. Does that count as creation of human life or not? If we killed it, are we effectively destroying an embryo?
Well,
or not.
I would argue. Let me give you. Well, let me break that up into parts. And first of all, does that create information? Does that create new information? Maybe that's a more fundamental thing to start to address what you're saying. And my first blush answer would be yes, that is creating new information. Does it create a new organism? I'm not going to answer that directly, but indirectly, I'll answer that in terms of. Software design radios. It's maybe something you aren't familiar with, but that's in my field where more and more stuff can be actually done on a computer, and due to high-speed analog to digital converters, you actually can do real things that otherwise would have typically been done with dedicated hardware. So it kind of blurs that line a little bit between what is, quote, natively done versus one is done through sort of a model or simulation. So it's an interesting thing. But that's probably about as far as I will go to answer it, but it's an intriguing question.
Any final questions? If not, then I'll thank all of our speakers for a very interesting.